Hello everyone and welcome to the HODLcast. We have a big update for you today. We're going through BlockFi, Celsius, the Tom Emmer anti-CBDC bill, and Operation Choke Point 2.0 and what that means for crypto in America. So in BlockFi, there hasn't been a request for an examiner yet. Examiners are usually brought in when there's allegations of fraud, misconduct, some kind of wrongdoing. We saw one come in the Celsius case. There has not been an examiner even brought in the FTX case yet, which kind of surprised me, but I wouldn't be surprised in BlockFi if they just don't need an examiner in this one. Zach Prince, the CEO, there's no allegations that he's conducted himself in any criminal type of way. And so right now, everything's kind of being handled by the UCC, which is the Unsecured Creditors Committee, the official committee for the unsecured creditors. They have a duty, a fiduciary duty, to uphold what's best for all creditors across every different category of creditor. And they have to put their own financial interests aside. However, this UCC group, they're the ones that have blocked BlockFi's motion to return funds to anyone that had assets in the non-interest-bearing accounts. So you may remember about maybe a month and a half ago, BlockFi filed a motion. They said it was very clearly articulated in their terms of service that anyone that wasn't in the interest-bearing account program should get their money back right away. And the unsecured, the UCC, they have blocked that, and the judge has agreed to hold on deciding on that motion until everyone can kind of come together and agree a little more. And what the UCC is saying is that there's not enough information and they still could need to do clawbacks from anyone that, say, were in the interest-bearing accounts and then moved to the non-interest-bearing wallets in that 90-day look-back period that is available in bankruptcy law, that you can claw back anything that happened in that 90 days. So that's what's creating the hold right now. It actually escalated to where the BlockFi debtors are accusing the BlockFi creditors of being divorced from reality, and the creditors are saying that the debtors are throwing a temper tantrum. So emotions are high in the filings right now. Judge Kaplan just said, you guys figure this out and we'll stay this motion. We'll wait a little while before we make a decision. There's a big issue going on with the Robinhood shares. You may remember right at the time of the bankruptcy filing, Zach Prince and BlockFi filed a motion against FTX to recover the Robinhood shares. It's 55 million shares that Zach says were pledged to him by SBF as part of the deal when they were doing the restructuring loan after the SEC settlement, where BlockFi had to pay $100 million. And that's really when they got in bed with FTX. And part of that transaction encompassed 55 million Robinhood shares, which are worth around $600 million today. Those shares are held in an Antigua shell company that's owned 90% by SBF and 10% by Gary Wang, and they've now been seized by the Department of Justice, who says they're looking into it as part of the fraud allegations against SBF and Gary Wang. Gary has agreed to a plea deal. SBF has pled non-guilty. Now that Antigua shell company is filing for Chapter 11, or they did already file on February 3rd in the US. And BlockFi is saying that that's ridiculous. It's a company with no employees, no business activity. It's just a complete shell. All it does is hold these shares. So by bringing it into the Chapter 11 process, it's just going to delay any answers and actually make a ton of fees for the bankruptcy lawyers in Antigua. So far, 1.7 million of fees have already been racked up through this Emergent Fidelity company's bankruptcy filings. The BlockFi attorneys got kind of creative in their writing style in the motion. They said, neither law nor equity require doing of a futile act. In this bankruptcy case, asks the court to do just that, to recognize an empty shell. The Antigua liquidator told the Block during an interview that she's just doing what's in the best interest for the creditors of Emergent Fidelity, even if we don't know who those creditors actually are. So from a financial perspective, it has been difficult to get a clear picture of what's going on with BlockFi, but it's been estimated that they owe 100,000 creditors over $10 billion, and $1.3 billion is owed to the top three creditors. In summary, you know, whatever BlockFi executive made the decision to sell their Bitcoin for $16,000 on November 10th really should be ashamed of themselves. The cardinal rule in crypto bankruptcy is that you always hold it in crypto. That's what saved the Mt. Gox creditors. It's a real shame that they liquidated everything for such low prices. The Celsius bankruptcy has had a lot of drama this past week. The UCC is trying to enforce retail clawbacks, or at least that's what they're threatening. This would mean anyone that was able to get their funds off this horrible platform 90 days before they filed for bankruptcy, anyone who had the foresight or was following the market, you know, they should be rewarded for having got their money off, not punished and being told they have to pull their money back onto the platform for the benefit of the people who didn't get their money off. Some of these retail creditors, they could have spent the money on taxes, their tuition, medical bills, rent. Who knows, but they might not have it anymore. Quite likely that they wouldn't have it anymore. And now they're being told, you've just got to come up with that money from somewhere and give it back to Celsius so that it can be benefited for the benefit of the rest of the people who still had money left on the platform. This is especially frustrating considering Alex Mashinsky and his wife haven't had any clawbacks against them come yet, and they're sitting on over $70 million. The examiner's report shows there's been clear fraud, lies, deceit. You'd think that the UCC would be attacking that money, not just the retail people that got their money off 90 days before the exchange went bankrupt. Some people are saying they're on the verge of suicide over this. They skirted losing their life savings, and then, you know, now to be told they've got to give it back to Celsius, it just seems really ridiculous. So 85% of the Celsius users had less than $5,000 on the platform, and they put forward a proposal to make a convenience class and just pay 85% of their creditors off so that they wouldn't be able to vote on whether or not these retail clawbacks are legitimate. There's several different types of clawbacks. There's insider clawbacks, which will be coming, you know, and that is the ones Mashinsky, Nuke Goldstein, Chrissy Mashinsky. Those people will be told they have to give any money back actually for a year window before the bankruptcy started. Then there's institutional clawbacks. Those encompass the loans that have been going out to various other exchanges, like anything with BlockFi, FTX, Voyager, any deals done with banks. Those would be in the institutional clawback bucket. Those will probably happen, but since so many of the other lenders are also in this bankruptcy status, it's going to take time to figure out and, you know, get that worked out. There should be some clawbacks coming in that respect, though. Then there's influencer clawbacks. So anyone that was promoting Celsius on their YouTube channels and getting paid to do so, they're going to be in a higher standard of clawbacks than the retail users. They're being asked to give their money back to the platform. And then the retail clawbacks, which, as we mentioned, those are just the innocent people that had the foresight to get off the exchange before it went under. Keep in mind, a lot of these are just negotiation tactics, and when you have a lot of lawyers all earning $2,000 an hour, there's a big incentive for them to bring up these kind of nonsensical claims to go back and forth and fight it out and earn hundreds of thousands of dollars to litigate these issues, even if they know that they're never really going to do the retail clawbacks. Then with the anti-CBDC bill, I love this one. So the Biden administration and the Federal Reserve have been working on this CBDC, a central bank digital currency. If this were to move forward, it would really bring America into kind of the Chinese-style social credit score surveillance state. These CBDCs, they're programmable money that can be distributed as like a welfare check and told you have to spend this by the end of the month or it's going to expire. Or it can be withdrawn from people's bank accounts. Say they say something bad on social media and they get a fine. That can be taken right out of their CBDC wallet if it's deemed appropriate by the government. It's really un-American. It's totally like a communist type of thing where there's no longer an incentive to work hard, make a business, earn money, because that money, it just expires. It's got no shelf life. You can't save in it. You know, it's just terrible. So the Republican and crypto-friendly Congressman Tom Emmer, he put forward an anti-CBDC bill this week that's getting a lot of splash. If passed, his bill will prevent a CBDC from ever being formed. It prevents the Federal Reserve from working on this bill in private, and it prevents them from distributing it to Americans. The Swiss citizens have railed against CBDCs this past week. They got enough signatures for a referendum vote that could enshrine cash into their constitutional rights. So the CBDC threatens people's ability to even hold coins or cash, which is like private money, you know, it doesn't have the same surveillance tracking abilities as CBDC does. So they want to put that right into their constitution, that it's a right that they can always hold their cash. In Lebanon, people have just had enough. They've actually started burning down banks and politicians' houses. Their currency has devalued 98% in the last few years, and people are just furious about it. This is something that Western leaders should take note of. You can't just steal everyone's money through inflation and expect people to calmly accept it. Then we've got Operation Chokepoint 2.0 underway in the United States. Originally, Operation Chokepoint was something that the FDIC, Federal Deposit Reserve Insurance, went to a lot of the banks and said, hey, we're gonna uninsure you if you continue banking certain industries that we deem high risk. The list of those industries included things like sex workers, strip clubs, Western Union was even on the list, anyone that was selling guns or weapons, anyone involved in the marijuana business. So that was ushered in under Obama in 2013, and it was kind of done quietly. It wasn't a public thing. The banks just started shutting down these people's accounts. And in 2020, Trump, he abolished it, and he made a big statement about it saying, you know, we can't do this in America. It's not right to just shut people out of banking, even if their industry is legal. But basically, it's happening again under the Biden administration, and this time the target seems to be crypto companies. On December 6th, Silvergate received a letter from Senator Warren accusing it of wrongdoing or malpractice for banking FTX and Alameda. On December 7th, Signature Bank announced that it was shutting down a big portion of its crypto deposit business. On January 3rd, the OCC, the FDIC, and the Fed released a joint statement outlining all the risks to banks for banking the crypto industry. On January 9th, Metropolitan Bank announced that it was getting out of its crypto business entirely. On January 21st, Binance announced that because of Signature Bank's new policy, it had to restrict US dollar withdrawals, anything under 100,000. It would still bank people over 100,000, but it eliminated under 100,000 withdrawals, which must be most of them, except for institutional withdrawals. On January 27th, the Federal Reserve declined Caitlin Long's two-year application for Custodia Bank. And on January 27th, they also issued a Fed policy statement discouraging banks from interacting with crypto companies. On January 27th, the Fed issued a policy statement discouraging banks from issuing or holding stablecoins in their reserves. On February 2nd, the DOJ announced an investigation of Silvergate Bank over its conduct involving FTX and Alameda. On February 6th, Binance suspended U.S. fiat transfers. On February 7th, that January 27th Federal Reserve policy statement about stablecoins was actually put into the Federal Register, making it a policy rule without going through any congressional review, any public comment period. So it was just kind of snuck into that Federal Registrar. On February 8th, Paxos got the bad news that their application to become a national trust is likely going to be declined by the OCC. On February 9th, the SEC sued Kraken in an unprecedented action against crypto staking. And on February 12th, Paxos was investigated by the SEC for its issuance of the Binance stablecoin. And then just this week, HSBC suspended crypto purchases made through its credit cards. So it does appear there's, you know, a pretty concerted effort to cut off banking from the crypto industry. But this just means the industry has to become a little more resilient. There needs to be more decentralized applications, peer-to-peer trading. It is going to drive a lot of industries offshore. So in Europe, they've got the MiCA regulations coming into place. They should be signed into law in April. And that's going to create a really clear and, you know, stable banking relationship and, you know, regulatory footing for a lot of crypto companies to issue ICOs, to operate what are called CASPs, like crypto asset service providers. And it specifically doesn't include Bitcoin, decentralized applications, and NFTs in its regulations. The only fear I have with this MiCA regulation is I've seen some of the European countries have a rule in their AML laws that you can't transfer off a centralized or custodial platform to a non-custodial wallet. So that could be pretty bad too if they put that into place. So like I said, we need, you know, more peer-to-peer and decentralized industries to make this whole crypto market thrive over the long term. The banks aren't just gonna sit back and, you know, watch as crypto takes over their livelihood. Thank you, and make sure if you enjoyed this video, hit the like button, leave a comment, subscribe to my channel. Really appreciate it. Thanks, and have a great day.